This is a Spirit of Truth Radio Arts original program in partnership with Salt and Light Catholic Radio.
This episode explores a side of sainthood that honestly I never gave much thought to. My experience with the saints has always been those that dealt with deep spiritual thought, doctors of the church that could teach me to pray or withstand the enemy's next attack. This episode is truly eye-opening to me because we look at the saints and their spouses, real people that had the same struggles as you and me. Joining me along the way to discuss how the saints met their spouses is Patrick O'Hearn, author of the book, Courtship of the Saints. Patrick, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, we've had a phone conversation before. You're a former editor of books for Tan Books, and that's really what we're going to be talking about tonight is one of their new titles that's just come out, and it's desperately needed.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I've spoken with a couple of friends of mine, with Eddie Trask out in Idaho from Catholic Recon, and Jay Goodman from Talking with a Good Man, and they're really, really excited about this title because their ministries are, Jay Goodman's ministry is so much focused on the man becoming the man that God meant you to be, and really on marriage. And so this book is really, really needed, especially because we are in such a crisis of manhood. So I want to ask you, what is the difference between courtship? Why is courtship so important?
Yeah. So courtship, I mean, just basically, you know, the difference between, you know, in terms of courtship and dating, you know, and this book isn't just for, you know, as I say, you know, a lot of people have gotten it. They're like, oh, my teenage daughter, well, you know, they love it. I wrote it for couples, you know, in marriage as well. This is, you know, because a husband should court his wife to the day he dies, you know, and I wrote this basically too, as a reflection for myself, you know, because you look at the saints and people always ask me like, how's your wife doing? I go, well, she'd be a lot better if she was married to a saint. And so it's kind of, you know, I joke about that, but it's true. You know, like there's just so much that we can learn from the saints, and they teach us here in this book the importance of courtship. So I wanted to set this up. This term goes back to biblical times and just, Joseph and Mary. You know, they would have had experienced courtship, and then the term itself came around, and I think it was around the 16th century. It referred to someone who was an advisor to a king and a queen, and then slowly developed into a term of pursuing someone with the idea of marriage. And so that was kind of the whole end goal, was like, is this going to be a suitable marriage partner? And then in the 20th century, as the automobile was coming and, you know, dating was kind of a lower class slang term that became mostly popularity. It didn't really even involve sex at the time. It was just people, but it was a popularity thing. Mm-hmm. And now we just see this huge, kind of like a huge difference. Like you have this tradition with courtship and then you have dating. And it's like, you know, as we see in the church and just everything in the world, it's like, you know, modernism just wants to get rid of everything that's in the past. It's like but here courtship brings us back to our roots. And so there's in this book here. So I the fundamental difference is courtship looks to see if someone has virtue, and it looks to heaven. Like, is this person going to be the best spouse for me? While dating, it's just focused on the present moment and how much pleasure I can get from someone.
How much research did you have to do? Because you have an extensive amount of saints listed in this book.
Yeah.
Tell me what your research was like.
Yeah. So I spent, you know, I would say this took me about over a year, you know, to research and write it. And, you know, this is the first time in my book that I've actually used interviews, and I only used it for a couple. I used it actually, I was blessed to interview St. Gianna Mola's daughter. And so I figured, what better way than go into would she probably be considered a second class relic, right? You know, if her mom's a first class relic, but she is a relic. She's probably a relic herself.
Don't tell her that. Don't call her a relic.
That's right. I didn't tell her that, but you know, I'd become good friends with her. And so she gave me just like the whole chapter, like on her mom and dad. And that's one of my favorite chapters. And so, you know, I was able to interview her. And then I interviewed another guy that was, his name is Venerable Vitaro Trancinelli, medical doctor from Italy. He would be in his late 70s if he was alive, you know, just recently, you know, he died like maybe 20 years ago. And he They adopted 7 children, and a lot of them had special needs because they had difficulty, you know, having children, and just a holy man. Mm-hmm. And so I interviewed the postulator of cause for his canonization. So two people that can give me like almost, you know, that, and then he's good friends, this postulator, with Venerable's wife. So again, I'm getting like firsthand sources. And then for the other ones, you know, I pull a lot of biographies of saints. So definitely like, you know, Saint Rita, I think I try to rely mostly on books as opposed to websites, but there's a few articles that I use.
Mm-hmm. You know, saints to me, and you know, I'm a cradle Catholic. I did fall away. I reverted back, but still, mm-hmm. saints to me are always like the you know, like you said, Saint Rita of Cassia, but you know, the Saint Catherine's, the Saint Teresa of Avila. You know, there are always people to me that have been in, you know, religious orders. You know, priests and bishops and people, men and women like that. This book really goes into the fact that, you know, we're called as just lay people, we're called to be holy and become saints ourselves. And that's why I'm so excited about this book. I just received it the other day I just started getting into it. I'm impressed with it. There's a couple of terms in here that I want to courtship defined, which is really good. How long did it take you to write this book?
Yeah, so it was about, I would say, over a year.
Yeah.
A year of research. My wife always jokes. She's like, you'd be better off going to Lowe's and getting another job. Just joking that when you write a book, it's a labor of love, because you don't, unless you're like, you know, Nicholas Sparks or someone, you're not, you know, I think that's one, I was joking as a naive writer when I was first getting into writing, and that wasn't my motivation, because, you know, some people think, oh, I'm just going to become rich and famous writing the books, but at the end of the day, you really don't.
Yeah.
But it's so that you don't write books to do that. If you do, you're in the wrong profession, because you write it because, you know, God inspires you. And I believe, like, you know, a lot of times when I was in prayer, especially before the Blessed Sacrament, you know, God just out of nowhere, God's like, hey, this puts this idea on my heart about this book. And I think, so my point is, you know, but, you know, all of us have certain talents, and, you know, I think we have a lot of people want to be writers that they're not. And even myself, I put it this way, like sometimes I feel like Mother Angelica said, when you die, she goes, like, if you sugarcoat the lives of the saints, you will get many years in purgatory, because you're just only going to tell the good things about them. So I always remember that advice. So in this book, you know, I do put, you know, in this book and then my Parents as Saints book, I tell stories of them where they made mistakes and how they failed, because it's important, because we can idolize the saints and then we think we fall short of that because we compare ourselves to them. So I think I just want to let you know, yeah, that part of my research involves looking at their flaws just equally as much as their virtues.
Mm. I was just reading something just today from Father Willie Doyle, who spoke about Peter's flaws and how Jesus's mercy lifted him up out of the tragedy of his denial. So that's a great point that, you know, you know, because we're all flawed. We need to know that, you know, we're forgiven and we are on the track to sainthood. Hey, you know, you bring up an interesting point about what is your writing process like?
Yeah. So my writing process is sort of, you know, my first book that I wrote for TAN, you know, I actually self-published it because I went to TAN, and this is before I started working for them, and they weren't, you know, it's kind of like a lot of times you'll hear from publishers, oh, we have too many books in our pipeline, you know, they call it a pipeline, and so my friend's just like, why don't you go self-publish it? And so then I did that, and then I, you know, got Our Lady opened a door at TAN, and then, you know, then they had an opening and they said, hey, well, we'll take your book. And I hadn't promoted. A lot of times publishers, just going back to, they don't really take on a lot of self-published books, especially if you're marketing a lot, you know, it's already been out in the market, but mine hadn't been, you know, promoted that well. But my process, going back to your question, is, you know, that first book, I didn't even have an outline. It was actually like 700 pages, and I gutted it down to, it's like 500 pages. And that's why it took me 3 years to write. Now this one, I kind of knew going in, I was like, there's kind of a sweet spot with writing about 40,000 to 60,000 words, which is, you know, anywhere from 180 to 260. Like, you don't want to write a 300 page book, honestly. Like, it's just, I mean, unless it's like this history of Christendom, but I think so. My process is now is, to come up with an outline, I think, you know, and to see, you know, just, and then maybe identify like what saints I want to cover. But a lot of times when I was doing this book, you know, actually, sorry, I'm all over the place, but this book I actually wanted to include, I had it written before I started with Tan, and I had many couples. The second half of the book was going to be couples who are living today and their miraculous stories. Like I have a friend who Mother Teresa kind of predicted his vocation, but the publisher Tan said, we just want saints. So I had to get rid of half of my book and start over. And as I was starting over, I just kind of, you know, I was looking at what saints were married. And so that's how I kind of did my, I looked at what chapter, you know, I kind of wanted to make the chapter somewhat similar length, but I was trying to go for, so I guess my writing process is all over the place, but I also think for this book, I did try to make, kind of had a clear outline.
Mm-hmm. But how many hours a day would you write?
Yeah, I would write on this one. I try to pencil in at least like an hour and a half every day, you know, before work. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it'd be Saturdays. I'd ask my wife, like when I hit the, getting closer to the deadline, I just like, I need, you know, 5 or 6 hours. So definitely, I mean, I'd consider it a part-time job when you write a book.
Yeah. When you are writing a book like this, how many edits did this book go through?
Yeah, it went through. So, you know, let's see it. The blessing about being at TAN, you know, when you're a traditional publisher, you do have an editor that goes through it. And just because I edit books, like every writer needs an editor. So like even myself, like I can't really edit my own book. I mean, you're kind of blind to it, kind of like love, right? You're blind to, you know, you can't see the flaws in it.
Yeah.
And so I had one editor, a cop, and then it went to, which is called the developmental editor, which is kind of the first passage. And then you have a copy editor who looks at like the grammar, more fine detail. And then the last person is like a proofreader and they go through it again. And then I also went through it one more time before that. So it was, I probably had three or four passes, and I'm sure there's still, you'll find any, you know, normally with most books, you do find some errors. So in the second print run, you know, we can correct those.
Yeah. I noticed that, you know, as you go through the, you know, the table of contents, you've got people from scripture that were married, and then you've got saintly representatives of, you know, people through history that Saint Therese of Lisieux's parents were a very, very saintly couple. And again, we need to see more people like this. And again, this is a tremendous book. Dave Imhoff, you are putting together a program that is based on Bishop Olmsted's booklet for married couples. You want to talk about?
Yeah, actually, we originally mentioned in that, I think it's Complete My Joy is the apostolic exhortation that Bishop Olmsted wrote for married couples, families. I don't think we're really using that. We're using a format that Father Ron Meyer had kind of developed with us. We call it the Married Couples Retreat. And what we've been doing, Patrick, is we've been trying a lot of these things, and they used to be like weekend retreats, and we found that the time and the money, the cost associated with weekend retreat with the food and the housing and et cetera, it was a barrier for entry for people to participate. So we're compressing these things into one day. So what we're doing is developing a one-day married couples retreat. Mm-hmm. Start off with, in the morning, and we'll do some, some witness talks by couples, discussions, prayer. We'll have reconciliation, the vigil mass, and then I call it a romantic dinner, but it's not meant to be, you know, that might not be the best term, but it's a time where the couple can talk amongst themselves. And we give them questions that would spur some of their discussion and that sort of thing. So that's kind of what we're doing. Any thoughts on that, Patrick?
That's beautiful. And sorry, was that for engaged couples or couples that are already married?
It's for married couples.
Yeah.
Married couples. You could do it with engaged couples as well. It's really to draw experience from, you know, other couples that, you know, are faithful and, you know, and they've had, you know, we all have problems. We all have challenges as we go through our life and our married life, you know, and that it is a sacrament. And anyway, and how do you overcome those things and whatnot? So it's a, you know, a witness of a couple, you know, to the retreatant couples, married couples.
Yeah.
So sort of how they can, you know, maybe get some insight and whatnot.
Yeah, I love it. And because, you know, I think we have so many retreats where we go off on by ourselves, you know, a guy will go away, and even married couples, we just, you know, like I know St. Teresa's dad, he would go on a retreat, but he'd go by himself. But I think what's lacking in the church is married couples go on a retreat. My wife and I, we've been married. It was 9 years ago yesterday. And like a couple of weeks ago, we went on our first marriage retreat together. And one of the practices we did was we sat before that, you know, Eucharistic adoration. And we actually went through and we asked our spouse forgiveness for anything that we kind of did to them. And maybe there's one area that we wounded them very bad. And we say, you know, this, I ask your forgiveness for this. And I think it just brings, you know, it's like, you know, we have that sacrament. We go to, you know, we go to confession. We encounter Jesus in that sacrament, right? But we often fail. And I'm the first one to admit it. Like, and my wife here, like, I'm in a sacrament with my wife. And so, like, Jesus is there present in our marriage. And I'm, you know, it's like, it's like he's almost like the last person that, you know, like, we don't think about him, that he's like, if we had a vision when we're at, you know, we're having dinner with our spouse or even praying with our spouse, it's like Christ is like, got his arms on both of us, you know, and it's just, and you know, just like confession, you know, there's, you see in those old images where like Jesus is above the priest giving you absolution. And I think that we need to like have those visuals, like, you know, when you're with your spouse or whether it's, you know, when you consummate your vows, right, your spouse is right there. I mean, it's, you know, Jesus is so present in our marriage, but we often forget about it. And I think what you're doing is incredible, you know, having those retreats as a reminder to that. So thank you.
Patrick, what advice would you give to someone to meet their spouse based on the saints' stories?
Yeah, I think the primary thing is prayer. You know, as, I mean, and that just goes to, you know, like St. Gianna, you know, she was in a spot when she was deciding if she'd be a missionary or become married. And she did a novena to Our Lady. And it says she even, her daughter said she even went to a pilgrimage to Our Lady of Lourdes. So, you know, if you're a young person out there listening and go on a pilgrimage, go to, you know, pick a spot and ask, you know, or even a shrine in the U.S. There's, you know, where you guys are at on the East Coast, right? You got Divine Mercy, but make a shrine. If you're a young lady, go make a pilgrimage and, you know, pray to St. Joseph and, or do a novena and keep praying. And I think, you know, God wants to give you that light. You know, it may not come in a vision or anything, but just, I think over time, you know, he hears those prayers for you. And the other thing I say is, put yourself in holy places too. You know, we talk about the near occasion of sin. Mm. Well, you can't find your spouse if you're in a near occasion of sin. So, I mean, you go to those places, you know, bars and, you know, just, I mean, granted, not drinking's not bad. You know, I mean, you could go to a good bar or Theology on Tap, but like, you're going to nightclubs, you're not going to find your spouse there. And so putting yourself in, you know, going to mass, well, like one of my cousins met their spouse in line for confession. So it's like, hey, you know, that person's a sinner. And so, I mean, those are good. And then I think the other thing I say is, you know, the book is patience, because, you know, I look at people like, you know, they're getting impatient because it's like, oh, they expect, like, you graduate from college, you're 22, you're going to meet your spouse right away. It doesn't happen. I mean, look at the lives of the saints. Look at St. Gianna was 32 when she met her husband. And then St. Teresa's mom, she lived in the same town with her husband for 14 years. They would cross paths, but they didn't meet each other until she was 26. And then he was about 34. And then the other example I have is Pope Benedict's parents. They got married, I think he was around 42 and his wife was 36. And he put an ad in the Catholic newspaper for his wife. And so it just shows you, like, there's not like a path where you're going to get married. God doesn't promise you you're going to get married when you're 22. Like, it's just, so being patient, waiting for his time, and putting yourself in those occasions of grace.
It really does take a woman to complete a man. I mean, unless you're, you know, a priest or something, somebody like that, having that fulfillment of a spouse is definitely needed. How can couples grow in love based on these stories of these saints?
I think one of the stories I said in there is like Saint Elizabeth of Hungary, and it said when her husband, you know, would come home from his trips, you know, he was a king and she was a queen, and she would give him 1,000 kisses. And I think, you know, that level of affection to your spouse is really important. Now, I was joking. Like, you don't go and make out in front of your wife, in front of your kids, you know, or in the kitchen, you know, you're like, what are you doing, Mom? But they need to see, like, you know, when the husband comes home from work, you know, like the wife, you know, she should come and greet him and with a smile and, you know, give him a kiss on the lips. Or when you're leaving, a man leaves for the day, should give his wife a kiss, you know, like, and it's not just like, you know, just kiss one time a day. I mean, there's got to be, you know, affection, give her a hug, even if you don't feel like it, you know. It's like, so I think that level of affection, and even I was blown away by the love letters of St. Gianna's parents. And I think it kind of makes me feel like, wow, I must not really love my wife the way they did. I mean, and I think it's, you know, throughout the day, again, you can send your wife a text if you're working, you know, just saying, I love you, how's your day going? So that constant communication. And then the final lesson, I think, is one of forgiveness. And you see this in, like, St. Rita. Her husband was very verbally abusive, and she, instead of arguing back with him, she just prayed for his conversion. And I think there is that level, you're going to realize you're going to betray your spouse either by your sins or just by not living up to the standard, the expectations they have. And so just asking for forgiveness and humility to your spouse when you've hurt them. So I think those are some lessons that the saints have taught me.
Do you have a favorite story?
My favorite one, I do have a couple in there that's pretty neat. They're actually the only couple that's not currently canonized, and they're still living today. And the reason I put their story in there is because Padre Pio introduced them. They actually live in, I think they live in Connecticut, the Bianchi family. And their daughter is a nun. She's a sister of life, and she endorsed my book. She, you know, our Lord gave her that beautiful prayer, the Litany of Trust. So she's a sister of life. And I love their story because, you know, the husband was studying to be a medical doctor, and he, on his summer residency, he went to San Giovanni Rotondo, and Padre, and then his wife was from Europe, and then they met over there, and basically at the same time, like, kind of Padre Pio set them up, and they tell their whole marriage story. I got permission to put it in there. And I just love that story because it's so detailed. And the words that Padre Pio told him, he says, because he asked Padre Pio, he goes, should I marry this girl? And he basically said yes, and prepare well for marriage. And I think all of us would, like, love to have a saint to tell us, like, who we should marry. I mean, wouldn't you, like, when you're young, like, hey, you should marry this one? But I think it's just, it's how important the saints are.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions I wanted was, why are the angels and saints so important in finding our spouse?
Yeah. Yep. I think on earth, if you'll see in my story, you know, I have the book, the story of in Tobit with the angel Raphael. And that's one of my favorite stories in the Bible. And I think I have the story of Padre Pio. And it just shows you on earth, like, these two stories show you how powerful the saints were when they were, like, Padre Pio was alive. Now in heaven, they're even like 10 times, you know, a million times greater, their intercession, because they're before the throne of God. And so I think we need to call upon them. And even the St. Louis and Zelie Martin, because saints that went through the same struggles that we go through, like, they're even more inclined to help us in heaven. So I think that we should call upon them.
What kind of struggles did these saints have in life? What are some of their failings?
Yep. I think there was one, let's see, in terms of, the one was, his name is, I got to think here for a second. It's I can't even think of his name. I have my book here, but he was called, let me pull it up here. My apologies.
No, that's quite all
right. It's funny when you write a book like a year ago, it's like, I forget that, but I have the one guy, his name was, on here in a second. Saints. So Blessed Jacob Hone. And so he was a very worldly man. Mm-hmm. And he was a lawyer. And then him and his wife went to a festival. His wife was very devout, and she got killed in a tragic accident. Mm. And when they were like burying her or whatever, as they were preparing her body, they found out she had a hair shirt underneath her clothes, and she was offering up all her fasting and sacrifices for her husband's conversion. Then after she died, he became a religious brother, and he is credited with writing the Stabat Mater, you know, one of the most beautiful prayers during Lent. So I think that was a struggle. And then there was Blessed Anna Maria Taggi, and she was very secular. She wore a lot. She wanted to impress her husband, so she wore all these, you know, fancy clothes and jewelry and makeup. And again, there's nothing wrong with makeup, but she just became so vain. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I think she had a vision or something of, and God said, like, get rid of that stuff, you know. And so she started to dress more simply. And so those were couples. And then in terms of other struggles, you know, you have, I put the story, Blessed Franz Jagensdager. He fathered a child out of wedlock before he was married. And then he kind of had a conversion. And so it just shows you, like, the saints aren't, you know, they make mistakes. You know, they're just like us. Yeah.
Now, St. Rita of Kasia, she has an amazing story. Her husband, Paolo, was very angry. Like, you'd said, she had two boys, and they were kind of following in his footsteps, but eventually he did convert. He did kind of, you know, he gave up the vendettas and things like that, and that's why she's known as the saint of impossible things. Is he a saint now?
He's not a saint. You know, and their marriage was arranged, basically. So, you know, Rita's parents wanted her to get married. Ever since she was little, you know, she wanted to become a nun. And I think, and then when she had that arranged marriage, she wanted to be obedient to her father. Mm-hmm. And so she got married. I think they wanted her just to take care of them when they got older. And mm-hmm. so she's like, okay, I'll do that. And then they go, no. And then we want you to get married. She's like, oh, I don't really want to get married. And then we want you to marry this guy. And this guy that they got married was very, you know, wasn't even virtuous at all. He had a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so it just shows you, like, I use that phrase, religious life after marriage, that God knew the secret desire of her heart, which was ultimately to become a nun. And so after her husband died, I think she was led into the convent at nighttime. She had knocked on the door of several convents. And they kept saying, you've been married. So that's kind of like, we don't want you. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of older. So one night, she woke up in the middle of the night, and she was in the convent. So that's one of the reasons why she's the patron of impossible causes.
Yeah, she was big in early in my conversion back to the church. EWTN ran a television show about that, and it really affected me. And she's so she's up there in my list of favorite saints.
Yeah.
If you were to be standing in a bookstore and say a Catholic bookstore, and there was a group of young adults there, what would you say to them to make them buy this book?
I know it's tough, because that's one of the biggest struggles I find is, you know, like, as an author, you have to promote your book, right? So right. You don't want to be like, hey, prideful, go get my book. But I think what I would say to them is these love stories, you know, because I wrote the, you know, the marketing copy for the book, and mm-hmm. that was kind of, And I say the saints are the greatest lovers in the world. And I do think, well, I would say this book is, these stories in here, they're better than any romance novel at all, because you see that, you know, these saints love God above everything, and you see how they love their spouse. When you read them, it kind of, they challenge you, because it's like, they set the bar on holiness. You know, we kind of get stale in our relationship and our marriage and in our with God, and we think, oh, like, a Lord, like, I love my spouse, but do I love my spouse madly, and do I love God madly? And I think these saints, if you read these stories, you'll see, like, a love that was just, you know, madly in love. And I think that it's a call for every person that's married.
You personally, after writing this, how has it affected your marriage?
Yeah.
In a profound way, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think when I stand before God, he's going to look at me and he's going to say, Patrick, did you live the words that you wrote? And, you know, I'm going to get on my knees and say, like I'm going to have to say, have mercy on me, God. Like, I'm trying. I mean, that's, so I think that I wrote this too. And I see that it has, like, I think just the level, like, affection and be more intentional in my relationship with my wife. But I can tell you, I fail like all the time. Like, when I read this book, it's almost like, man, like, I'm a hypocrite, you know, because the stuff that I'm writing, but it's also challenges me to want to be a better husband, you know, to, like, I put in the back of the book some things that husbands can do. And like, one of them is a date night, like, in your home once a week, and then going out to eat, you know, going out somewhere once a month with your spouse, but really making your spouse the priority in your after God, right?
Mm-hmm. What does a good Catholic marriage look like?
Yeah. I think I would say a good one is, I think it's, first of all, it's joyful. And you see couples that aren't, you know, complaining all the time, you know, just like about their spouse's weaknesses. It really is like, you know, shielding their spouse. Like, we shouldn't blame our spouse for anything. Like, even as men, right? Like, oh, you know, it's like, that's the curse of Adam, one of the curses of Adam, right? We go and blame our spouse for everything, but really joyful. And I think the other thing is, I would say, you know, sacrificial, right? We said there's so many hidden ways that you can suffer, even for your spouse, like even offering up certain things. Like, if your spouse, maybe they have a certain weakness, like you see, like anger, like in some of these saints, and it just, you know, you're offering that up for their conversion. And then the other thing is, this couple in here, I think their process of canonization will be open someday. But I forget, it's Thomas and Palquita Alvera. They were an Opus Dei, but their children said about them that they loved each other like more every single day. And so you just see this idea of husband and wife, like the children can see it. They sense it, that like when mommy and daddy really love each other, when they look each other in the eyes, that they're madly in love with each other. So I think that those are, I think, what I see. And then I'd say finally, most important is a prayer life together. Whether that's some kind of prayer outside of, your typical meal prayer. So the one couple, Venerable Vitaro, him and his wife, they would pray the rosary together, read scripture. And another couple, they did 30 minutes of meditation. So I think a strong prayer life that's both individual and with your spouse.
Mm. Yeah, that's important. I just saw on the news this morning, a married couple that had been married for 82 years. 82 years they've been married. They're 102 and 101 or something like that. So, I mean, just God bless them. And you could see the joy that was on their face when they were with each other. God bless them. And I did notice, and you spoke about, there are some prayers in the back of the book to help to develop a prayer life for families. What's your advice to those that are discerning marriage?
Yeah, I think like, start praying now for your future spouse. You know, and when you have, you know, every single day, you know, when my wife was in eighth grade, her mother took her to like a Jason Everett talk, and he said, pray a memorare every day for your future spouse. So she did that, and I know her prayers did that. And I think the other thing is, you know, as we see in our culture today, there's so many temptations that generations before us never had, you know, with obviously with pornography. It's just, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, and I think we need to realize that every time we say no to sin, like you're saying yes to your future spouse.
Mm.
And even as men, you know, with the struggle with purity, it's like, I am living for my, like, I don't want my son, you know, because of generational sins. It's like, I'm saying no to this vice because I want my son to be innocent and my daughter. So it's looking beyond yourself. Like, you're kind of sacrificing, because often we just live for ourselves, young people, especially, you know, the culture is just live for yourself. But if you start living for others and start putting God first, I think, you know, in terms of marriage, it's worth it. It's all worth it in the end. Like, just that ability to choose your spouse now.
Mm. I've said it a number of times tonight. This book is great, but are there any speaking engagements coming up for you?
You know, I think I'm speaking in a parish in North Carolina in October, But I have on my website, I would love to, you know, it's just, my website is just contemplativeheartpress.com, and my email's on there. You can contact, but I'm kind of a, I guess I'm not a, not out there as much just cause I would more than welcome if someone wants to bring me to a parish. I would love to speak on this and on the topic of the parents of the saints, which I spent 3 years writing on. Those are my two speaking engagements. Not too many speaking engagements, but
No, this is really a subject that is so needed. Like I said before, that we are in a man crisis. There's a shortage of real men, and I honestly believe that, you know, like Don Corleone said, if a man doesn't love his family, he's not a man.
I love it. That's a great accent. And it's everything, you know, so many men, I know so many guys in their 30s, and I'm, you know, I just like, man, like, you got to go, like Lewis Martin, he was like 35, 34. And basically he was a comfortable bachelor, but his mother kept praying that his mother had met Zelly at a lace making class. And she prayed that they would meet someday, you know, that his son would marry that daughter. So every parent needs to pray, especially for their children's future spouse, but also encourage them. If you have any children that are in their 30s, they're just sitting around, it's like, you might have a future saint come out of your lineage. And even, you know, look at Pope Benedict's parents. They were 50. His dad was 50 and his mother was 43 when they had him. And I think as so many couples today, it's like when they hit 40s, they're like, I'm done having kids. You know, it's just, but you could have a future pope or a future saint. And I think that's going to be a shock to a lot of people when they die. God could appear to them, you know, when they stand before God, he's like, you know, like a single guy that decides, like, I never want to get married. Just my career is like, you know what? I had a saint that was going to be born of you, but he decided, you know, I don't know. I think he might, you know, I don't know if he would do that, but I mean, there's a chance, right? I mean, he'll tell us what we could have been, and we'll just ask for mercy. But I think you'll never know until you try. You know, you'll never, you're a single guy, go out there. You know, if God's calling you to marriage, you know, just start, you know, if you have to go on, you know, even Catholic Match, look, you know, put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciate that you've put in a prayer section for this. This is great. And it's, and the other section to do is how to choose a spouse, you know, how to choose a spouse. So Patrick, how do we choose a spouse?
Yeah. So I put a whole series of questions. There's a priest, I think Father Valash, I can't even pronounce his last name, but he wrote this many years ago. And so he has like an examination of conscience for basically for finding a spouse. And it's a book that Tan put out called Clean Love and Courtship. And I got permission to use that section. And again, some of the stuff is like, I mean, you can tell it was written many centuries ago, but it's still applicable. And like, you know, some of the questions, you know, imagine a crisis in your life, poverty, sickness, that might demand a high quality of virtue to remain faithful to God, would he be a help to practice such virtue? You know, this is from like a woman that, and you know, we don't think about, I think actually the number one question that we should ask our people discerning is like, how well does this person handle suffering? Because if they're, you know, when they get difficult times, are they going to flee? Are they going to complain? Are they going to, you know, and so that's a legitimate question. Like how, and you know, often when you're courting or dating someone, all you see is the good in them, but it's like, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, like go on a trip with your parents and like have your older brothers, like, you know, mess with the dude or something and just see what happens. I don't know. I mean, you gotta like see how they handle suffering. Another question, like, does he get along with your family? You know, like that's often in dating, you know, one of the fundamental differences, many people, they'll meet that future in-law like after they're engaged. It's like in courtship, you actually ask the father for permission to court the daughter and then for the engagement. So the father has met the son, you know, the future son-in-law multiple times and he can say no to it. And it's a tricky, you know, what happens after that? It's kind of a tricky question. Do they proceed or not? But it just shows you the importance of a dad, the authority figure. Like, you know, a daughter, you know, if a daughter's virtuous and the father's virtuous, they should be on the same page on, you know, the kind of guy. They could see this. And the daughter rightfully should listen. If the father's like, you know what, this guy, I see this bad habit in him. I think, you know, he needs to work on this before he gets my blessing, you know.
You know, Patrick, one of the things that you've said tonight that I think is very, very important, and I'm going to go back to it, is how you went on that retreat and you reconciled with your wife by, you know, asking for forgiveness if you've ever hurt her. That's such an important message. And yeah. I think it's the same way that it returns our, you know, the way reconciliation works to, you know, restore us to state of grace with God. I think it's beautiful how that must return people to the state of grace within their marriage as well.
Definitely. You know, that's one of the best things I love to hear too. It's like, you know, when my wife's having a bad day or whatever, and she's, you know, or if I'm in a bad attitude, I just say, I'm really sorry for, you know, I'm sorry for the way I've been acting. And you're like, oh, it's okay. I forgive you. You know, and I think, you know, as men, it's like, you know, maybe because of pride, we don't want to apologize. You know, it's so difficult for us to admit even if we're only, maybe our wife is more at blame than us, but even if we cause some of it, I think we need to take the high road and say, initiate it, because we're the initiators, right? And say, you know, I'm sorry, even though maybe she did more of it, but it's like, I'm with you 100% on that. That you can get that same forgiveness level that, I mean, obviously there's grace there. You know, it's obviously not your sins are getting absolved. Your wife can't absolve you of your sins, but there's a similar effect that you get in confession that when your wife says, I forgive you, or you ask for forgiveness, it's, you know, you kind of like you start over again, you know, it's like it's like almost like you're exchanging your vows again because you're going back to him. So.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So you've talked a lot about Tan Books. You were an editor for Tan Books, but what are you doing now?
Yeah. So I worked, you know, I was blessed to be Tan's editor for over 2 years. It was, you know, I was just grateful. It was one of my favorite jobs. And I loved it, you know, coming up with all the book ideas. And then, you know, God had another plan. And so now I work at Holy Heroes, which is a Catholic company. And we do books. We do of these glory stories. They're amazing children's CDs for kids. You can listen to different, like, they're like, you can put, actually, we still make CDs, believe it or not, you know, and you can, you know, if your car still has a CD player, but they have you can listen to all different saints. And so I'm a brand manager. We're kind of launching a product called Very Young Catholics in the future. It's we have it out there, but we're going to do a relaunch. And it's this lady goes to all these different countries. And she visits them and she tells stories of young Catholics, and they're just beautiful stories. And my job is to kind of shepherd that project and just to promote Holy Heroes products. And it's very good. I'd say our target audience is mostly children, you know, young parents and children. And so it's a little different than Tam, but mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at. And then I write and edit still on the side.
Good. Do you have anything else in the pipeline?
Yeah, no, I do. I do. Actually, this fall, I have a book coming out with Ave Maria Press called The Grief of Dads, and I co-authored it with two other men. And this book goes through stories of child loss. It's the only book that I've found that's written for Catholic fathers. And we have stories of men who have lost children by suicide, sons by suicide. They've lost a child in, you know, one of the wars. And then we go through different saints, male saints who lost children. And then we give a whole resources. So I really encourage anyone that's like lost a child. It's for pre-order now, but it's called The Grief of Dads. And I think it's just a book because so many men have been forgotten and so many marriages fall apart because of child loss. And I think this book that's why we wrote this book.
Yeah. My good friend, Pat King in Idaho, he sadly lost a child, and it brought him back to the Catholic Church, and he has such a beautiful story. I mean, I don't know how you can make anything beautiful out of that, but Pat, his story is amazing. And so I look forward to seeing that book when it comes out, yeah. My friend.
Thanks.
Is there anything I'm missing? Is there anything that you want to get out there and
No, I think the importance, you know, just when you read these stories, again, this book is like, if you have a courtship, if you have a teenage child or a son in college, I mean, I think this book is really, it kind of just, you know, because a Father Ripperger endorsed the book, and he gave me, you know, these four stages of courtship, which are kind of, you know, before that, we didn't really know in dating, like, hey, how far, you know, what's appropriate? What's, you know, what can I do? Can I kiss? Can I do it? But he has these four stages, and, you know, I don't want to give it away, but when you read the book, it's very clear on, you know, this is how you pursue a this is how you pursue someone chastely and purely. And I think the second thing is just for married couples to see that, you know, when you read these stories, not to get, I put a lot of suffering in there and a lot of sin in these stories, not like bad, just like, you know, the sin of betrayal, just to remind couples that like the saints weren't perfect. And in your marriage, you may think like, hey, your neighbor down the street, or that couple you see at the parish has the, they have the most amazing marriage, but there's a story in here. I think there's a quote in there. It says, you never know the hidden trials of a couple. So when you fall to that temptation to like compare your marriage to like the saints or another couple, just remind yourself like, hey, God has a path for your marriage to holiness, and you can learn from the saints, but obviously like you're not called to exactly imitate everything they did.
So Patrick, if people want to find you in your stuff, where can they go?
Yeah, they can go. My website is contemplativeheartpress.com. And then I also have someone advised me to get on social media, just Instagram. Uh-huh. And I kind of despise social media, but I'm on there, Patrick R. O'Hearn, and I post. And then LinkedIn, I'm also on there. So I post stuff on, you know, articles and like once a week.
For my guest, Patrick O'Hearn, my producer, David Imhoff, I'm Down the Hall Dave, always praying that your troubles be less, your blessings be more, and nothing but happiness come through your door. We'll see you next time.